My name is Rachel Ann Margaret Schulman. Next up on WGXC is All Together Now, a local show of information, news, weather, interview, and reports, and more. Email info at WGXC.org to get involved with your creative community radio stations.
This is 90.7 FM WGXC Aqua, Hudson Catskill, the station that everyone loves.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. Michael Ryan reports for the Mountain Eagle that Republicans in the Greene County legislature quarreled over spending on a new building for lawyers and judges next to the county courthouse in Catskill, delaying a vote to a special meeting at 6 p.m. on November 20th. Public Safety Committee Chair Thomas Hobart, a Republican from Coxsackie, pulled four resolutions related to bids for construction for a new justice center. Hobart and a few other Republicans questioned whether the county needed to spend so much on the $28.5 million proposal. Hobart said, and I quote, "We need to consider this fiscally without pushing this on the people of Greene County for the next 30 years, end quote. Then fellow Republican legislator Patty Handel from Durham, who is also on the Public Safety Committee, said, and I quote, "I believe it was very disrespectful of Tommy not to speak to other members of the committee before doing this. I feel sure he spoke to other people, but he did not speak to us," end quote. Catskill Republican legislators Matthew Lavera and Michael Bulich supported Hobart's blocking the vote on part of the proposal. Deputy County Administrator Warren Hart explained how the building had been designed. He said, and I quote, "We went through the current staff, what they have and what they are lacking, and filled in at a capacity of growth," end quote. Legislative Chair Pat Linger, a Republican from New Baltimore, said he was, and I quote, "not happy," end quote, that the resolutions were pulled, and said, and I quote, "I think that there should be a full board vote. If you wanted to gather the no votes, that's fine. But to pull it with no other plan to move forward is a cop-out," end quote. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. Tiffany Greenwalt Simon reports for Columbia Green Media that on November 13th, an unknown number of protesters gathered outside of Representative Mark Molinaro's office in Leeds for a ceasefire in Gaza. The protest was part of the American Friends Service Committee's Day of Action for Peace in Palestine. Spee Braun, organizer of the Greene County protest, said of the makeshift memorials for those killed in the fighting, and I quote, "We wanted to remember the children who have been killed up to now," end quote. In a statement to the media, Molinaro said he does not support a ceasefire. He said, and I quote, "There was a ceasefire on October 6th. Then on October 7th, Hamas launched a savage attack, murdering innocent citizens and taking hostages. Israel has every right to defend itself against terrorism, and the United States will stand with them," end quote. Braun disagreed, saying, and I quote, "Our tax dollars are paying for Israel's actions. We're paying for bombs to be dropped on hospitals. We need Molinaro to stand up and say no tax dollars for war crimes," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Porcupine Soup reports that Bridge Street's theater's production of Hannah Moscovich's East of Berlin tied for outstanding production of a play at the annual Berkshire Theater Critics Association Berkey Awards. It was the second year in a row a Bridge Street Theater production tied for the award. Bridge Street Theater Artistic Director John Soley said, and I quote, "This feels like it's becoming a weird sort of a pattern," end quote. This year, they tied with Shakespeare and Company's production of August Wilson's Fences. Last year, Bridge Street Theater's production of Eugene O'Neill's Long Day's Journey into Night tied for outstanding production of a play with Barrington Stage Company's Waiting for Godot. Read more about this story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Instead of being met with leaders engaging with us, we were met by police pulling people to the ground in riot gear, macing people.
Activist Danny Noble attacks the response to the more than 100 pro-Palestinian demonstrators demanding an Israeli ceasefire outside the Democratic National Committee headquarters in Washington, D.C. Some members of Congress attending a reception inside were evacuated in police vehicles. Demonstrators also managed to shut down bridges in Boston and San Francisco, where President Joe Biden and world leaders were gathering for an economic summit. The Senate has passed a stopgap spending bill to avoid a government shutdown with a little time to spare. Majority Leader Chuck Schumer hailed new House Speaker Mike Johnson for working with Democrats.
Because of bipartisan cooperation, we're keeping the government open without any poison pills or harmful cuts to vital programs.
The bill keeps all government agencies open until January 19th and some a bit longer. But members of the House Freedom Caucus, including Texas Congressman Chip Roy, say Johnson's failure to win concessions leaves them with little to campaign on.
I would have shoved down the throats of the United States Senate a funding bill that included Israel and dared Chuck Schumer to shut the government down and go home and eat turkey.
Republican senators tried and failed for the second time in 2 weeks to undo Alabama Senator Tommy Tuberville's hold on more than 400 military nominees. Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina supports Tuberville's position on abortion, but says the hold is eroding national security.
The policy is wrong, but holding these officers who had nothing to do with this is wrong.
The GOP senators say they are prepared to vote for a Democratic resolution to change Senate rules if Tuberville refuses to budge. Republican New York Representative George Santos says he won't seek re-election. A just-released House Ethics Committee report describes substantial evidence that Santos broke federal laws, but he's refusing to resign.
I will continue to fight to defend myself. I will continue to serve the 3rd Congressional District of New York until the people choose to not have me.
Politico reports Nevada Attorney General Aaron Ford is investigating Republican operatives who falsely pledged the state's 6 electoral votes to former President Donald Trump in 2020, despite him losing the state. Ford says the matter has been on his radar for some time.
I don't make prosecutorial decisions based on partisan or political preferences. Never have.
False electors in Georgia and Michigan are already facing criminal charges. Arizona is investigating that state's alternative Trump slate. A Michigan judge says Trump can remain on the state's 2024 primary ballot following a legal attempt to remove him due to his role in the January 6th insurrection. A similar lawsuit was just dismissed by the Minnesota State Supreme Court, and a decision in Colorado is expected next week. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Voters in 3 Michigan cities approved ranked choice voting November 7th, but state law doesn't yet allow it. November 15th, the Voter Choice Act was reintroduced in the U.S. Senate, proposing matching funds for state and local governments to implement RCV. Voters in Kalamazoo, Royal Oak, and East Lansing passed changes to their city charters to allow ranked choice voting for mayor and city commission. That's good news for democracy advocates who argue that RCV offers more options for voters, guarantees a majority winner, and costs less in the long run by eliminating expensive and low turnout runoff elections. Problem is, Michigan law doesn't allow RCV, though Michigan Live reports that a state representative plans to introduce a bill to allow it. Meanwhile, in Washington, U.S. Senators Michael Bennett of Colorado and Angus King of Maine reintroduced the Voter Choice Act, proposing $40 million in federal matching funds to help states and municipalities implement ranked choice voting systems. Maine and Alaska currently use it statewide. Nevada and Arizona will vote on it in 2024, and 50 counties and cities have adopted it, making it one of the fastest-growing democracy reforms. Passage of the Voter Choice Act is unlikely in the U.S. House because the Republican National Committee recently opposed RCV. We have more on ranked choice voting and the groups taking action at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
And now, here is your WGXC weekend weather report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a chance of showers mainly before 7 a.m. today. Otherwise, it will be mostly cloudy through mid-morning, then gradually clearing with the temperature falling to around 40 degrees by 5 p.m. There'll be a northwest wind at 13 to 15 miles an hour with gusts as high as 26 miles an hour. Tonight, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 32 degrees and a northwest wind at 5 to 13 miles per hour, becoming southwest after midnight. Winds could gust as high as 24 miles an hour. On Sunday, there will be a slight chance of showers before 1 p.m. It will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 47 degrees and a northwest wind at 7 to 11 miles an hour with gusts as high as 21 miles per hour. And on Sunday night, it will be partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 27 degrees. And on Monday, it will be mostly sunny with a temperature high near 39 degrees. And that is your weekend weather report from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Elaine Shimono of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by Upstate Films, featuring first-run and repertory films at movie theaters located in Rhinebeck and Saugerties, as well as live music, filmmaker conversations, staged readings, community events, variety shows, magic, comedy, and more. The Hudson Valley Picture Show traveling series brings cinema to locations around the region. The latest schedules, as well as upcoming pop-up events at the Community Theater in Catskill, can be found at upstatefilms.org.
Do you enjoy the arts, have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members. And get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
Do you have some news to share with WGXC listeners or a special community event you want everyone to know about? You can send press releases on any subject to news@wgxc.org, where they will be shared with all WGXC reporters, hosts, and programmers. Anyone can also add an event to the WGXC calendar online at wgxc.org/events. Just go to wgxc.org/events and click on the Add an Event button at the top of the page and type in the information about your event. WGXC announcers read these events on the air throughout the day, and internet readers can access them anytime. So please let WGXC listeners know when you're making news or when you have an event to share with your community.
Are you a night owl? Do you like to keep other people awake? Want to do a late night radio show on WGXC? Your community radio station has slots open for interesting late night shows. Something scary or strange. A show about what lurks in the night. Or music meant for late night listening. Apply for a show at midnight at WGXC. www.xcaqua.org and become a part of your community.
Welcome back with your host, Randall Martin. And, you know, today we're talking about the theme of communication. And I have a very special guest, a wonderful person here in the Hudson Valley, many of which you know, and maybe that some that you don't know, but after this interview, you will know all about her. And we're going to be speaking to Rabbi Zoe Bizak. Zoe, how are you?
I'm well, thank you, Randall. It's wonderful to be here. How are you doing?
Yeah, I am sort of in between a lot of different thoughts, I think, as many people. I've got a lot of things kind of buzzing yes. around in my head, you know, the holidays, the world, you know, it's just a lot of things happening. And I know that you, as I was explaining now, our pre-telephone conversations, our pre-interview conversations, that I know you as Rabbi, Rabbi Zoe. However, there are many facets. You're a singer, you're a pianist, you're an author, you're an accordionist, writer and accordionist at the Peace Ensemble. How do you yes. make time and balance all of those pursuits as well as being a rabbi?
Well, I feel like a professional juggler is okay. the truth of it. And that is really how I feel most of the time. I guess I have a lot of passions for a lot of things, and I was a musician first, and so my music has always carried me through my life, and my prayer life and my music life weave together, excuse me, very harmoniously, and everything comes from those two things.
You know, I've heard you sing. I love the way you sing. And seeing you perform, and actually, I was just listening to you got a performance on your Facebook page with mm-hmm. you and a bass player. And I'm sitting here as a drummer. I'm thinking, you know what? I could put a reggae beat to the back Good. Of what you were doing, and it would fit just perfectly in this. What song is that? It, the first song in the concert.
I don't know which song because there's a lot of videos. On my Facebook page, so I don't know which one, but my bass player, Robert Bard, he joins me. He's also in the Peace Ensemble.
Okay.
And with me, and he plays at my synagogue, Temple Israel of Catskill, for many of our services. And I call Robert my musical brother because he is, and what a joy he is to play with. And anytime you want to come and bring your drums and add them, that would be a great blessing.
You got a deal. I was sitting there listening and I was thinking about, you know, some jazzy beats and everything. And then I just, you know, I was in my mind, I was accompanying with it, shifted to a reggae beat and coming in the three, and it fit perfectly with what you were singing. I'm like, wow, that would be amazingly interesting.
Well, let's do it sometime. Okay.
Okay.
I love it.
Okay.
Great.
Well, we're talking about communications today and how I think especially the holidays are complicated enough with trying to communicate with relatives and people in a stressful environment of the holidays, people traveling a long time to get there and all the other, and you know, they have maybe different dietary things. And then all the other sort of generalized anxiety from politics to what's happening in the world, I think it's become a much more polarized time to have any sort of conversation, but yet that's the basis of how we live. From a spiritual perspective, how can people go about having productive conversations that don't end in fists?
Yes. Yes. I'd say it's what you and I are doing right now. You're speaking, I'm listening. I'm speaking, you're listening. It's not always an easy thing to do. And we tend to spend time with people who are often like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe from the same place, maybe go to the same place of worship or work together, or, you know, we tend to. But it's really important And my life is so deeply enriched by being and spending time with and getting to know people from who live differently than I do, who were raised differently, who are from different places, of a different race, of a different ethnicity. It's so important because how else can we learn about how someone who's different from us lives and what they experience and what their challenges are and how they view the world and what they eat and what their customs are and what their music is. And, you know, so especially right now with the world being turned upside down, it's never been more important to make sure that we don't just insulate ourselves out of fear, which is quite easy to do. And I think the natural reaction, but it's really a time to make sure we keep openness so that we can keep learning and keep expanding how we think and keep evolving to become more loving and more accepting and more supportive of others.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it sounds simple, you know, listening,
but yes,
it is not necessarily simple at all. And, you know, I think that, as you say, I know that you travel a lot. You go from Albany to Woodstock. You have a pulse on the region. And I think that having conversations, like as you said, when you have conversations with people that you know that are like-minded, those are easy conversations because you're basically going to be agreeing for the most part on the major tenets of any issues, as and maybe with the exception of a sports team or something like that. But on the other issues, world issues, political issues, these can become thorny subjects. And I hearken back to what my parents used to tell me, is that, you know, you can disagree without being disagreeable.
Beautiful.
How do you? Beautiful. But when people now, you know, but that was a different time ago. That was many, many, many years ago, decades ago, I should say. How do you, when there are deeply felt opinions, when people are rooted in things that are passionate, that they believe, and how do you have a conversation where people are not necessarily listening and they're rooted in the belief and they don't necessarily come to the table with a desire to learn something new or to hear a different perspective or to show empathy? They just come because they have an opinion and they want to speak it.
Yeah. I would say that's such a hard and challenging situation. You know, if you have two people sitting down who care about one another and want to know how the other one really feels and what the other one's really going through and, you know, willing to listen, that's one thing. But if you sit down with someone who only wants to speak but not listen, it's really hard. I've had some very hard conversations lately, and some of them have turned out so beautifully, just where I've just been weeping with a connection and feeling someone else's pain who thinks differently than I do and has a different perspective. And I've also come to, I hate the expression, but butting heads, but, you know, I've come to also had some conversations where they don't seem to go, they're not productive. They don't seem to, they haven't yet harmonized. Mm-hmm. And I'm praying about that a lot to see how I can, you know, like in Judaism, we always say, you know, you have to turn it and turn it. You turn a situation around and look at it from every aspect, because, you know, you get a different viewpoint. You might be able to think of something differently. You might have a different question. And so with those relationships and those conversations that I've had that haven't had the outcome that I've want and hoping and praying for, I'm still turning those things around to try to see what else can I do? How can I approach this differently? because I really want to have, I want to be compassionate towards everybody, and I want to have conversations that are, that lead to peacefulness and working together and understanding each other better.
Breaking Circles of Harm and Violence was an event held by the People's Campaign for Parole Justice. They were acknowledging and awarding projects that involve restorative justice, fighting crime, building community. I spoke with David Graham, the Community Justice and Outreach Manager from the Office of Albany County District Attorney. This is our conversation. I'm Andrea Cunliffe, reporting for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
A little bit about specifically what do you do?
I wear multiple hats, so assuming the DA's hat, the community justice hat, I'm wearing that one right now. So I oversee a community justice outreach center in Arbor Hill of Albany, and we literally do community justice. We utilize restorative justice to resolve cases. And we have community members trained in restorative justice volunteer to resolve cases.
And is that like lawyers and attorneys?
No, just random community members that go through a training. And we have all walks of life, young, old, educated, maybe not so much educated, formerly incarcerated. And I also have, now I have one who's a former graduate of the program who's now a facilitator. So, yes, and they focus on repairing of harm instead of punishment. There's an amount of money that's owed that we focus on repairing that. Apologies, you know, in every case is different and every person is different. So all of them kind of go organically, you know, differently. But at the end, there's a young person, 18 to 24, who completes a program. You see a lot of maturity in that individual, and we help them move forward.
How do you get people to come in and take part in what you offer?
As in the volunteers or the cases?
The cases.
So one of the luxuries of working for the district attorney's office, he has the cases. So our district attorney earmarks the cases of these individuals in the right age group and level of crimes. And then we have another community board who reviews the cases every month, and they vote on them, which cases they want to bring in. And that's.
And they bring them into you, to your organization, and you do research. How do you deal with that? How do you do that?
So the monthly boards vote on these cases. If they vote a case in, they sit with me and I do an intake on them, and I match them with a facilitator, and we begin working, planning their circle and the restorative circle.
So are these people who are accused of a crime, or are they involved?
Oh, these are people who have been arrested.
Oh,
yes.
So are they incarcerated at the time?
Not so much now. I haven't seen too many, but some have been. But depends, I guess, on the case. Yeah, they're actually diverted from sentencing. So they're, you know, that's why our program is extremely powerful, because not only an alternative to incarceration, it's an alternative to sentencing. And once they've completed all of their agreement, they go before a judge and have all cases dismissed and expunged. So it's as if it's never happened.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Is this something that's been going on for a while now?
7 years, 2016, this felony level of restorative justice started. But I think back in 2004, it started at the misdemeanor level.
This is phenomenal. What a brilliant idea. Who started this?
The district attorney, David Soares. It's his program. Yeah. It's his program to... And one of the things he talks, the motto is fighting crime and building hope for his office. And he focuses on prevention. You know, he realizes that, you know, we can't arrest and prosecute our way out of these problems. We need to put some attention on prevention and solving some of the problems in our community. And one of the powerful things about our program is you're seeing that these individuals who come in to work out their case, through the process, they mature, but they also become more part of the community, and they have network. They're supported by individuals. We have an individual who is formerly incarcerated. He is also a facilitator, a very good facilitator, and at the end of one of his cases, when his case was about to graduate, he had a breakdown, and he cried, and he said, we never had a program like this when I was coming up. And he just cried and just thought about what life would be like for himself or even society if we had programs like this where we surrounded these individuals and held them accountable for what their actions were, but at the same time supported them in their growth and moving forward. And we all really took that in. That hit me a lot to hear him say that, and it helped me to realize, too, this program is bigger than we even know. You know, we're really making great strides.
So it's also community healing. It's also working within the human. It's not yes. hiring a lawyer or, no. you know, that it's action.
Yes,
happening community. Within the community.
Yes, community members.
Is that what you would say would be a necessary force in keeping crime down, keeping violence down?
Yes. No studies show that people are less likely to commit a crime against someone they know, especially violent crimes. But, you know, when you don't know someone, it's kind of easier to, I don't know that person, you know. But when you know and you have a connection, I believe it's harder to, you know, you have more of an understanding. Like, you know, his mom works at the hospital, you know, he's got a disabled brother. Like, you understand, like, you know, maybe that's the one we should victimize. But, you know, I mean, I'm just thinking out loud.
No,
but, yeah,
sure.
That's kind of what you hear from people. But when you're connected, I'll give you an example. On our lower level crime program, we had a college student that was stealing hygiene personal items from a big box store or whatever. Part of her reparative agreement was to do community service in the community, and she found a soup kitchen or pantry in Albany that she did her hours and served there. And she had such a connection with that place. When she was done with her hours, she would come back because she just knew the people that worked there. They were like friends to her now. And also she came back and told us she felt very stupid because all the things she was stealing, this program gives out for free. So it was like, wow. But she wasn't connected with the community. She didn't know that at the time. So she got involved with a stealing scheme that another student taught her how to do. So again, not having that connection is part of it. And when you're connected to the community, you can make a phone call. I don't have to steal anything. I know people, you know.
What inspired you to work with this particular endeavor? Are you a lawyer? Are you?
I would say I've always been running youth programs. I've been a community person from jump, and that's how I know the individual I came to this meeting to support. He was my former student when I worked at Albany High
Who
School.
Who was that?
Lameek Taylor.
Oh, right.
And also I run a program through the YMCA called Teen Night on Saturday nights. Lameek was a participant of that program as well. So I've always been working with young people in our community. So it was only a natural segue to help prevent them. You know, it gave me more tools to do the work that I do of already investing and supporting them.
And are you from the capital region?
Yes. Yeah.
From where, Albany?
Albany area, yeah. Yeah.
So what do you see happening in the future with this organization and your endeavors? How do you see it moving forward?
Well, it's part of Albany County. It is a government entity, and so this office is a satellite office. And I just see us expanding the work in our office and possibly other offices in other lanes in the community, because it's focused on restoring and resolving issues. And if we focus on that, I believe we will all win at the end. So just really expanding the work, letting others know about the work, and getting more people involved.
It's brilliant. Wonderful. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
This has been Andrea Kundla for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, speaking with David Graham, Community Justice and Outreach Manager for the Office of the Albany County District Attorney.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, November the 17th, 2023. I'm Mike Clifford. Workers at Legacy's women's health clinics have announced their intention to unionize. The details from Eric Tayanoff.
About 60 nurse midwives and other health staff at clinics in Oregon and Southwest Washington intend to join the Oregon Nurses Association. Heather Webster is a certified nurse midwife at Legacy Emanuel Medical Center in North Portland. She says the decision was driven in part by the failed attempt to close the birth center at Legacy Mount Hood Medical Center in Gresham.
There's a lot of stakeholders in this that were never consulted about that change and how it would affect their jobs. And so it became really obvious that we really needed a seat at the table and to be able to have negotiations around things like this and be able to be heard when we had concerns.
In response to the drive, Legacy Health said it respects an employee's right to choose whether to be represented by a union and will respect the outcome of any petition to unionize. Staff involved in the union drive are hoping to get approval from the National Labor Relations Board for a vote by the end of the year.
And opposition is growing among hunters and anglers to a proposed road in Alaska's iconic Brooks Range.
The Brooks Range extends from Alaska's Arctic into Canada's Yukon. The Ambler Industrial Road would cut a 211-mile-long east-to-west swath through the southern flanks of the range in some of the world's most pristine wilderness. Jen Leahy, Alaska Program Manager with the Theodore Roosevelt Conservation Partnership, says the road would threaten habitat and the wildlife that rely on it.
This project has really concerning impacts for keystone species like caribou and salmon, and would forever change the wild and remote character of the Brooks Range that is treasured by so many Alaskans and Americans.
More than 35 small businesses, outdoor brands, and conservation groups recently formed hunters and anglers for the Brooks Range, galvanizing their opposition. The state argues the road is an important economic opportunity. Mining corporations say the Ambler Industrial Road would give them access to valuable minerals. The road corridor would be off-limits to hunters and anglers. The outdoor community questions the fairness of that and why the state would let international mining companies permanently damage some of the world's best big game hunting and fishing territory. I'm Mark Moran.
Now from CNN, agreeing with an anti-Semitic post on his social media platform, X, Elon Musk endorsed the claim that Jewish communities push hatred against whites. CNN reports an X post Wednesday afternoon said Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of hatred against whites that they claimed to want to stop. This is Public News Service. Next, in order to fight climate change, officials are pushing for investments through the Inflation Reduction Act.
Elected officials to protect America recently met in D.C. for their annual Climate Emergency and Energy Security Summit. The group says clean energy investments under the IRA can improve clean energy infrastructure. Alex Cornell DeHoo, a former Marine and co-founder of EOPA, says relying on fossil fuels is risky. He emphasizes they not only make our economy susceptible to unpredictable fuel prices, but also jeopardize our national security.
With the Inflation Reduction Act, it is part of the solution to decouple ourselves from this dependency on the source of energy in which autocratic nations primarily control. And that's the exciting thing about it. It's an amazing solution that's really tangible and a historic investment.
He also stresses the importance of educating historically disadvantaged communities about federal investments available to combat the climate crisis under the Justice 40 Initiative. Shantia Hudson reporting.
And this week's move by federal lawmakers to advance another temporary government budget also means the Farm Bill, which recently expired, is now extended.
The Farm Bill sets spending levels for agricultural and food assistance programs every 5 years. The 2018 version expired earlier this fall, and lawmakers are now finalizing a year-long extension. Mike Lavender of the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition says they shouldn't wait the full year to adopt the new Farm Bill, noting the 2018 version came with limitations.
The 2018 Farm Bill, for example, decreased investment in some of the conservation practices and conservation programs that we know are key to building resilience, but also incredibly popular among farmers.
To deal with rising threats from climate change, his group says Congress should include new investments in the new version by early 2024. The North Dakota Farmers Union is echoing calls for urgency. I'm Mike Moen.
Finally, Ross Brown lets us know it might not make the heart skip a beat like the sight of a monarch butterfly or a gray wolf, but biologists say a rare flowering New Mexico plant deserves endangered species protection.
Inclusion of the swale paintbrush is under consideration by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Michael Robinson with the Center for Biological Diversity says the plant historically grew at several southwestern sites, but climate change and excessive grazing have taken their toll.
We're talking about an extraordinarily arid area in the boot heel of New Mexico. It's Chihuahuan Desert. It's got its own stark beauty, but when you see a relatively tall, graceful plant, that provides a whole new perspective on the landscape.
This is Mike Clifford. Thank you for wrapping up your week with Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations on your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Jamal Cutler reports for Columbia Green Media that six projects in Columbia County won $5.6 million of more than $57 million of New York's latest Regional Economic Development Council Initiative Awards. F. Michael Tucker, president and CEO of the Columbia Economic Development Corporation, said, and I quote, Columbia County did really well. We're very grateful to the governor's office considering projects in Columbia County and awarding funds to the individual project sponsors to advance economic opportunities in Columbia County, end quote. Montgomery Street projects in Hudson received $1,526,168 for rehabilitation of the Katz Building. The Hudson Athens Lighthouse Preservation Society gets $500,000 to fix the underwater foundation of the lighthouse. Friends of the Public Square Hudson receives $500,000 for renovation. The town of New Lebanon got $500,000 for improvements to Shafford Memorial Park and $25,000 for a public utilities project. Clock Estate of Kinderhook received $275,000 for tourism events, and Hudson Hall gets $70,650 for the Hudson Jazz Festival. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Tiffany Greenwald Simon reports for Columbia Green Media that there will be better cell service soon on Farm to Market Road in Coxsackie after the town's planning board approved a new tower on November 14th, a silo. The 136-foot high tower will look like a silo behind 20 12-foot high evergreen trees. Planning Board Chair Scott Fisher said the town code meant a cell tower is allowed to be built. Fisher said, and I quote, My vote is not for the cell tower. My vote is that if we say no, we lose our destiny in what this cell tower will look like, end quote. The tower passed the planning board 5-1, with Gerald Bunting opposing all three resolutions that needed approval. He said he was lodging a protest vote and said, and I quote, The basis of our economy here is tourism. People come here for the scenery. They don't come here for telecoms. This is going to have a serious effect on property values, not just to the immediate residents, but residents further away, because the overall value of the area is going to be negatively impacted. I understand why this needed to pass, but it can't be unanimous, end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. There are signs locally that winter is approaching. The village of Catskill this week hung holiday lights and took down the statue of Rip Van Winkle at the top of Main Street for the winter so that it is not hit by snowplows. After opening early on November 16th and 17th for the area's first skiing, Bellarm Mountain closed again and will open for the season on November 24th. Windham Mountain's website does not hint when it will start skiing, and Hunter Mountain's website also does not say when it will open and reports no snowfall yet this season. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, November 17th. Local early morning temperatures range from 29 degrees in Steventown to 46 in Skodak. Regional average soil temperature is 44. Wrap up if you head outside today. It will be windy. We get a high of 62 degrees at 1 p.m. and the increasing cloud cover will usher in rain an hour or so after dark. Rain will be strongest between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. We will see a low of 45 degrees. Tomorrow, the rain should vacate the area by 10 a.m. and we see the winds will stick around and we get a high of 49 degrees. Overnight, temperatures dip to 32 degrees. Then Sunday will be dry and breezy with a high of 42. Sunset today will be at 4:20 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:44 a.m. Looking way up, we see the Leonid meteor shower is underway and due to peak tonight into tomorrow. Unfortunately, the approaching front does not bode well for sky watchers, but tomorrow night, things could be improved. Plasma winds will be slow at 341 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 8 MHz till dark, then fair below 60 MHz with good conditions below 4 MHz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Hi, everybody. My name is Daniel Thomas Wachowski. Tune in to the local news for better weather, interviews with your friends and neighbors, and more on WGXC from 7 to 10 every morning. WGXC is here to start your day with democracy now at 8. Tune in weekdays to 90.7 FM to get your morning going.
Field recordings, found sounds, soundscapes, ambience.
Bells, bugs,
whispers, and plinks.
Hosted by
Stephen Bradley
and Edward Rahelstreet.
Every fifth Tuesday of the month from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m.
Bells, bugs, whispers, and plinks.
On WGXC 90.7 FM. WGXC.org.
WGXC believes in creative use of the airwaves. WGXC is a program division of the nonprofit arts organization Wave Farm, based in Acre, New York. We are the only station in the country to dedicate significant airtime to radio as an artistic medium. Tune in to transmission art and experimental sound programming overnight and on Saturdays, and hear artists from all over the world who sculpt and compose with the airwaves.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Delmar Wellness Center of Alesia, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
This is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, and I'm back for my monthly chat with Carol Roberts, Young People's Services Librarian at the wonderful Troy Public Library, and the wonderful Carol Roberts. Welcome back to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's so good to see you.
It's so good to see you, too. And we're talking in November, which, you know, with Thanksgiving coming, our thoughts are about Native Americans in part, but you have books that are take different takes on Native Americans. So start us off.
Okay, well, the first book that I want to talk about is a picture book. It's called Encounter, and it's written by Brittany Luby, and she is a first-person citizen. This is about a chance encounter between a native fisherman and a sailor from a nearby ship. This is supposed to be a take on or an imagining of how the explorer Jacques Cartier's experience back in the mid-1500s when he came to America and ended up trying to claim it for France, or parts of it for France. And so this is the author's conception of what it might have been like if they had come here to meet the native peoples first instead of coming with the idea of colonizing them. So it explores, explores this chance meeting, and it's illustrated in the most beautiful gouache painting, which I learned is an opaque type of watercolor, and it's lovely, brilliant colors. But they meet as two people and two equals. So you have the sailor from the ship and the fisherman. Meanwhile, as they're meeting, you have things around the environment making observations about the two of them. And at one point, they're swimming, playing games with beluga whales, and one of the whales thinks to himself, oh, what a great pod they would make because they get along so well. And so through this encounter, it is found, of course, that they're more alike than they are different. And the author in the back, there's an author's note which explains the history and includes how Cartier kidnapped, actually, this is a fact, two fishermen, native fishermen, and brought them to France. And they were kept there for over a year before they were returned. And the thought is that he got information from them about the land and the waterways and things that would help them with their their plan to claim the land for France and their exploration. There's also an author's reflection on why he wrote what he did. And it also includes this quote, which I thought was great, which says, talks about the importance of, quote, not displacing others in serving ourselves, unquote.
What reading level would you say that is?
I'd say this is probably K through third.
And she's not kidding about the beautiful illustrations. The colors are just magnificent. It shows kids swimming in the ocean and deer looking out as the ship is pulling away. Beautiful book. Thanks.
Thanks. If I could, let me just read the very last passage. You see a silhouette of animals, the ship off in the distance, and a warm campfire. And it reads, "Moon watched sailor and fisher fall asleep. She shone on their 10 fingers. She shone on their 10 toes. Moon listened to their two hearts beat. Ba-boom, ba-boom. She heard the beauty of all living things."
That's beautiful. I like the idea of the moon watching us. I think I like that idea. Okay, and the next book?
The next book is also from a native author, and it's called Indigenous Ingenuity, A Celebration of Traditional North American Knowledge. It's written by Deidre Haverlock and Edward Kay, and she is a native author. It's a new book which marries scientific discoveries and inventions along with a history of Native America. This is a native take on the exploration of North America, and it lists so much factual information, and it really goes into detail that you wouldn't see in a regular history book, but it's really a blending of scientific information and discoveries by things which were developed by indigenous cultures. It's an incredible resource. So it's looking at the discoveries from an indigenous perspective, because of course history is written by the victors. In the back, there's all kinds of information, what we call back matter. There's a listing of all the cultural areas and peoples which are referenced, from the Arctic to the subarctic, from California to the Great Plateaus and Great Basin. There's also a large ecological take on all these things. There's photographs, of artifacts.
And I noticed as you're flipping through, there are some activity suggestions going on too.
Yes, this book is just full of resources. So it's a great book for introducing Native American history, but also American history. It's, I would say, ideal for ages K through 3. I think it could actually go a little higher than that.
Great. And the next book?
Let's see. The next book I have is called Res Ball, and this is a young adult book, I would say, for ages 12 and up. And it takes place on a Chippewa reservation, and it's called the Red Lake Nation, which is in Minnesota. And it's about a teen who dreams of being a pro basketball player. And it's a story about a boy dealing with grief and losing his brother, who died the year before in a car accident. And he's trying to deal with his grief and at the same time find his identity. He's trying to prove to his father, who didn't have much faith in him, that he is capable and honorable.
And from the cover, it looks like it's about basketball.
It is indeed. This would be a great book for teens who enjoy sports fiction. And some aspects that the book deals with, of course, is racism. And there are realistic teen characters which offer a window onto life on a reservation, you know, as a young adult. For all these reasons, I think this would be a great book for high school students, especially anyone who enjoys sports and graphic novels and dating.
Is it a graphic novel, or are there some illustrations in it, or...
It's not a graphic novel, but the character loves graphic novels, is discovering romance, and has got a sheer love of basketball, which appeals to so many people.
That's terrific. And in our last couple minutes, the final one?
The last one, this is by Tracy Sorrell, and I reviewed a book of hers last year. And this is another one of hers. It's called We Are Grateful. And it's got bright gouache watercolors again, and it conveys the modern life of the Cherokee people. We see them engaged in traditional crafts, making moccasins, playing stickball, which is similar to what we call lacrosse, but it's celebrating the history of their people, and it's organized by seasons, and with a change of each, we see the word Atsalaheliga, which means we are grateful in Cherokee.
It's nice to have something about Thanksgiving and indigenous people that isn't just, oh, isn't it nice that they fed the settlers?
Yes, there's a lot more. There's a lot more to the story. We've only ever had half the story and not even necessarily the truth, but be that as it may. What I love about this book is there is a Cherokee, what they call a syllabary, which includes a key to the written language. Apparently, each symbol stands for a complete syllable. So it's fun to go through the pages, and at the bottom, you can find the Cherokee symbols, and so you can decode the words. So it's kind of like a puzzle, which is fun.
Great. And those four books, again, were Encounter, Indigenous Ingenuity, Res Ball, and We Are Grateful. Full details of authors and titles will be in the segment description on our website. Carol, if people wanted more information or help with picking other books, how do they reach you?
They can call us at the main library, or they can stop in to the young people's room. And anyone who's behind the desk can help them find whatever they're looking for.
Okay, and that was Carol Roberts, Young People Services Librarian at Troy Public Library. You can also check the website, thetroylibrary.org. The word the is an important part of that URL. And this is Bria Barthel for Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you so much.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the Flint Hills of Kansas, Pete Farrell owns the 7,000-acre ranch that his great-grandfather established 135 years ago. He says income from oil production on the land helped save the family's ranch during a